Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill. Jeff Johnson here with Lisa fucking Murphy.
Hello.
Lisa Murphy, how you doing?
I am pretty good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm delightful. Nice walk with the hounds this morning. A little bit of fall color already popping
Into
the trees. Yeah. It's just, well, I don't know if it's fall color or it hasn't rained for a while and things are, you know, you got early spring, you got the bright leaves and everything is all fresh. And now everything's got a couple miles on it now. And
kind of like me,
tattered around the edges. But there's that coolness in the air in the morning. That kind of makes me think spring is coming. You probably don't feel that in Florida.
No, spring is coming or fall is coming.
Well, I mean, spring is coming. I meant fall is coming, but of course, spring is coming also because that's the way it works. after fall and winter, spring will be coming if things keep moving along. So, Lisa Murphy, want to talk about? Let me find the note card.
A note card. A
note card with
me. If we had a dollar for every note card.
So the note card, this is something posted to your Facebook a long time ago when we were asking for topics and never got to. The topic is about shared reading. And I don't even know what that is. So we're not getting into that. But one of the takeaways, one of the comments about the topic of shared reading was encouraging a group of that teachers are baffled on how to engage a group of sitting preschoolers. And I just wanted to pick that apart, especially in the time of COVID, everything that goes on in the world now is COVID tinted, apparently.
Hey, so repeat it again. They're baffled. What was the word?
Somebody had commented, new teachers and others are baffled. How to encourage a group of to engage a group of sitting preschoolers.
And my snarky comment is I'm baffled that we would be expecting preschoolers to be having to sit still. And right now there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, we're living in a world where apparently one of the huge impacts of COVID is that all we knew and know about child development fades away. Because apparently developmentally appropriate practice is no longer in effect in the time of COVID because we have become a world where way too many children are expected to social distance and stay still and stare at screens when there's nothing in 150 years plus of knowledge on the way children grow and learn that suggests that is beneficial, let alone possible. Children mm-hmm. interact and children touch and children move, and that's the way it is. And my guess is we're maybe fucking some kids up this way, but also there were plenty of programs out there before COVID that were doing a lot of trying to engage children while they were sitting. So
I think that's some of the shining the light on that I've mentioned both with you and in other platforms is just, I think we are coming face to face with the fact that some of what we expected prior wasn't developmentally appropriate. And the people who already knew that, who now feel that they're being, dare I say, so to speak, pushed back, you know, in their evolution, like pushing, they're feeling like they're having to go back to ways of teaching that they've kind of done their own work and evolved away from, you know, and so people are very frustrated and upset. And I mean, I've said probably 100 times since this has all started that if anything is requiring you to dip below the most bottom rung of DAP that you're willing to stand on, then maybe it wasn't time to reopen.
Yeah, yeah, but, absolutely.
And people don't want to talk about, well, they want to talk about it, but it's kind of like we're just dancing in circles because, you know, I realize that people got to keep the lights on. I get that. But I'm also worried that we are back, to use one of your phrases, Jeff, we're engaging in another social experiment with children.
Yeah.
And the people who, you know, if you, let's, you know, broaden the conversation.
So, I mean, let's pull the whole sitting children thing apart. It's very clear that human children are not wired to sit still. And I still remember one of my favorite examples of people getting this wrong is years ago in Minnesota. I'm getting ready for a presentation, and you know, you're doing your, getting your stuff set up front stuff, and people are coming in, and these two women sit down at the round 8-person table in the front row, and
people at a table
and start man, they were dark days, weren't they, when people actually get together in conference rooms and ate rubbery chicken. They're both toddler teachers from different programs, and as one is lamenting to the other about how she is struggling this year to get her 2-year-olds to sit still for circle time because it's only 45 minutes.
Oh my God.
And the other is right along with her. Yeah, it's at mine too. It's just, I don't know if maybe it's something in the water. I don't know. They just won't sit still. Well, fuck. They're not. Yeah.
They're not designed to.
2-year-olds aren't built to sit still. And so,
but adults, okay, so not that this is in any way the solution. However, if you're not clear on what you're, well, actually, if you are clear on your expectations, what you are expecting from an age group, whether they're developmentally appropriate expectations or not. So if you are of the camp that 2-year-olds should be expected to sit for a 45-minute circle time, your action, language, and behaviors in the classroom as you engage with that child, those children, are going to be reflective of that, right? And so you're going to find yourself doing stuff, saying stuff, expecting stuff that completely misses the mark of where those children are developmentally, right?
Yeah.
But what has to happen, so they could sit through a workshop with you or a workshop with me, and we can say the things that we've always said, which is that, you know, you don't need to go to a workshop about how to get 2-year-olds to sit still. You need to go to a workshop to figure out why you're expecting 2-year-olds to be able to sit still, right? Because I can give you suggestions and techniques and strategies all day, but until you actually take the time to identify clearly what you actually believe in, you are not going to be able to change your practice. So it's like you have to go a layer deeper. You know, you have to figure out either where that expectation come from or why you're expecting this. Otherwise suggestions for intervention or for changing or relaxing or relinquishing some of that control are going to fall on deaf ears, and you're still going to have the expectation of toddlers needing to sit still.
Do you think if you added a session on why do I think toddlers need to sit still to your portfolio, it would be heavily booked and people would show up for it?
Well, you know who would show up for it? And the people who have already evolved would probably show up for it in order to maybe gain some new tools for their own tool belt as they go back and coach and mentor other people maybe in their early childhood community. I heard Tom Bernard, am I saying his last name right? You know, is it Bernard? Tom Bernard from the Body and Mind, Tom? The podcast.
I've never said it out loud.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Tom from Teaching in the Body with the Body and Mind. I was a guest on their show and he pointed that out. And I tell you, Jeff, there's only a few things that like stay in my head like forever. And he offered that on the show, that you can't really change your practice until you've identified your values, which I'll be honest, you know that, but to have him to hear him actually say it, I've kept that like in my top pocket ever since I heard him say that. And I find that it needs to be tossed out all the time.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Because until you've actually modified your value or your expectation, your practice is not going to follow. You have to do that first initial shift, because then once you actually either articulate what you really believe in or state that value, your practice isn't going to be able to shift.
Now, there are so few people in my experience that are truly interested in evaluating and maybe shifting their practices. And even if you step back a step further into them looking at their own position on those things, like why am I here? It's even that the number gets even smaller. So
I'll totally acknowledge that. And for true effective long-term change in our practice, to actually change the view, your mindset, that toddlers have to sit still for a 45-minute circle time, unless you are willing to go and pluck that apart and figure out where that came from, where that's grounded in the research, who told you that, your practice is going to follow your mind. Your body Sure. follows the mind, right?
Absolutely. And when it comes to, I mean, that is, I think, true for, I mean, all change. You can want to change something in your life, but unless you evaluate why you've been doing the things the way you've been doing them, that real change is difficult. I use cupcakes. I love me a chocolate cupcake, especially a chocolate cupcake with hunks of chocolate in it. Delicious.
A chocolate cupcake.
And I spent a long time wanting to not eat as many chocolate cupcakes because look, you can only eat so many chocolate cupcakes and still put your pants on. And of course, we're living in a place where in a world now where everybody is just zoomed above the waist. So I guess it doesn't really matter if I'm wearing pants most of the time, but still I like to be able to put my pants on. And so I had to look at why am I eating the cupcakes? Not wanting to stop eating the cupcakes wasn't enough. Looking at why I was eating them or wanting them or drawn to them and picking that apart and getting on the right side of that was the first step to not eating the cupcakes. I decided, it's going on a year now that I decided I needed to get to the gym more. And I've talked about it a number of times. And to start getting there, I had to figure out, well, you know, the stuff has always been there. Why haven't you been using it? Well, because I'm a lazy fucker. And truly, I had to unpack that and force myself not to be who I was to get on the other side of it. So, that, I mean, I think that all ties together, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, because what the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right?
Yeah.
So somebody comes to a workshop and we talk to them about how 45-minute circle times, really for anybody, but in this conversation for toddlers specifically, aren't developmentally appropriate. So then somebody takes that at face value without doing the cognitive work, right? And then they go back and say, oh, well, Jeff and Lisa said that I can't do this. But meanwhile, they're still holding on to the expectation that it should be happening. So it really doesn't matter what ends up happening because the value hasn't been explored. The expectation is still going to be there. Maybe they're not doing circle time right there, but there's still something in the back of your head. So
yeah, yeah.
I really am. I've really also been plugging a lot of Angela Hanscom, really, when it comes to the moving around and the. You know, why are they falling out of their chairs? Well, because they haven't had the opportunity to
because they've been in chairs.
they've been in chairs. That's why they're falling out of them.
I'm glad you brought her up because I was just gonna go there for years. I mean, preschoolers sitting isn't a COVID problem. It is a pre-COVID problem. For years before that, it was such a problem that Angela had to write her book, Balanced and Barefoot, which basically says, hey, kids are sitting on their ass too much. Now, that's not exactly the language Angela would use.
No.
And it's a beautifully written book that is very accessible and full of research about all of this. And the whole premise is kids need to get it off their butts and move more. And we as adults need to be more supportive of that. And that was going on years and years and years before COVID. COVID has intensified it, apparently.
Well, and I think the evidence of it, especially in the last couple of weeks, as kids are, going back to school, quote unquote, and a lot of them going back virtually. And I actually had a conversation with my mom yesterday, former Head Start preschool teacher, and some of her colleagues who are now, they're calling her and they're like, how do you do preschool with 3 and 4 year olds on Zoom? And my mom, God love her, 70 and some change, right? She's like, you don't. Period. You can't.
Yeah. And I mean,
my brain is all over the map here, because one of my biggest frustrations, and you know this, Jeff, and so do the listeners, is that when we have all of, not only do we have our history and what we know about best practice, but we've got research. I mean, hardcore, peer-reviewed, empirical evidence that children need to be moving their bodies. And so the fact that we continue to engage in activity that flies smack in the face of what we know we need to be doing, just it makes me crazy. You know, I just don't know what else needs to happen. You know, does Harvard need to say that this isn't okay? You know, like whose voice is going to actually be listened to?
Well, I mean, and I mean, it depends on who at Harvard, because there's, I can't remember her name now, but there is a Harvard early learning person or early education person running around. She's so anti-homeschool because, I mean, what, I mean, that's.
I was just using. Somebody.
Yeah, and it's even worse than that for me, because over the last couple of months, I've seen people who essentially do what we do out in the early learning world, give presentations and write books and kind of advocate, make this almost 180-degree turn from being place-centered and focused to trying to create a business model where they're trying to help people do online preschool more effectively. And that seems disingenuous and dishonest. And I know you got to make a buck, but to flip what you stated you believed before COVID to make this change, just it's unconscionable as far as I'm concerned, but it's going on, and I'm not going to call out anybody. I mean, I could, but I'm a dick, but I'm not that much of a dick. If you look on the interwebs, you can probably find those people if you look for them.
So yesterday, not yesterday, the day before, I forget, I had a mom reach out to me. I don't know her. She found me somewhere and I was actually driving as she called. And so by virtue of being in the car, I spent probably a lot more time on the phone with her than perhaps maybe I would have, you know what I'm saying? Cause I could. And I think I essentially talked this woman into starting her own de-school, unschool program, where she lived. And, you know, I didn't set out with that agenda, but as she was talking about what she believed in, what she didn't believe in, what her kids were now being expected to do, I was like, have you ever heard of this? And she's like, no. And I'm like, well, let me tell you a little bit about this. Like, you go do your own homework, you know, because clearly I'm not telling you what to do with your children.
Sure.
But I kid you not, she's followed up with so many emails. And she's like, you know, I think my husband and I have decided that this is what we're going to do. And so to me, I guess what I'm trying to point out is that it might just take one little conversation, one shift of understanding, one little bit more website, you know, one little thing that makes somebody go, oh, I can do this, right? Or this is something that's out there that I just maybe didn't know was out there that is totally 100% aligned, for the most part, with my family's belief system. And we're not having to now compromise what we believe in because we're not aware that there's another option. And that's, I think, a piece of this puzzle, especially as parents are really struggling. What are we doing and how are we going to make this work? And I, I guess because of the role I'm in, and I feel fortunate that my eyes are able to see some of those other quote unquote educational options. Sometimes I think I'm guilty of forgetting that what to me is just in my wheelhouse might be something brand spanking new to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we should also point out that there, I mean, during this crazy time, there are places that are not so bought into the crazy where 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds are tending to do regular 3- and 4-year-old stuff in their early learning settings of this in this time. And if you think that's probably the way it should be where you are, you really do need to do some thinking about who you're voting for, or if you're voting, or how you're voting. Because I mean, that does play an impact on it. And I mean, I don't want to go any deeper into it than that, but I mean, that's one of the things we can do to push back is use the influence we have over the people that are making those bigger decisions on us and for us.
And I also think having those conversations with the families, you know, because I mean, you and I probably both know handfuls of people who have said, hey, here's what we're still doing. We're doing this. I'm not going to compromise what I know to be how children are. And if that means that you're not that comfortable right now, I get that. I respect that, you know, no finger pointing at all. However, if you're going to stay at this program, you know, this is what it's going to look like. And it's not going to look much different than what it has looked like. And I really, really, really am proud and respect that, you know, and I realize not everybody's been in that position to make that decision. But it's I think, important to point out that it wasn't just that we just continued business as usual with our head in the sand. We continued business as usual after having conversations with the families who were going to be a part of this. Cards on the table, full disclosure. This is what we know about how children learn and socialize and interact. It's not going to look much different. What do we actually need to talk about?
Yeah. We went all kinds of different directions in this.
Yes,
episode.
We did. Didn't we?
I want to circle back to preschoolers and engaging them in engaging sitting groups of preschoolers. Before we wrap up, I guess the best way, the most effective way I found to engage a group of sitting preschoolers is to say, "Go play," and then step back out of the way and let them go play. Of a group of 8 or 10 or 12, maybe 1 or 2 or 3 may choose to stay sitting and pick their noses or talk or whatever it is they do. Well, the rest went off to engage the world as preschoolers are wired to do. And those who chose to sit generally wouldn't be still for very long, or not as still as one might expect them to be in a adult-centered, adult-led sitting experience. So, I mean, we got that going for us, I guess.
Well, and I to the sitting piece again. Sorry for not. I'm not sorry, but I think some of what I hear in my head with a listener is, but that's what they are doing. You know, they are having to sit 6 feet away from somebody and interact with something that I put in front of them that's been bleached and it's in a Ziploc baggie. And that just, it just breaks my heart, Jeff. I mean, not to be melodramatic, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, it harkens back to me, the drills I remember from elementary school when we all had to go down into the basement of the 3-story elementary school because we were having this isn't what they called it because we were in second grade. They were having a nuclear attack drill because if we all went down to the basement of the 3-story brick building and crouched in the hallway and covered our heads, the Russian A-bomb wasn't going to do us any damage. It's that kabuki theater. What's going on today with preschoolers is kabuki education, and it's bullshit. And the people who are making people do that, they know it's bullshit too. At least I hope they do, because if they think it's in any way effective or valuable for children, it's even worse, right?
Yeah.
If people are actually finding that, okay, we got to bleach everything and then put the kids in their kitty cubes so they can't touch or breathe on each. I mean, if they think that's actually good, in any way, it's even worse than it not working.
That's where I think the frustration comes from, is that the folks who are now being expected to implement some of those expectations, not to get off on the riff that I've been riffing about, but I will again, because I'll take any opportunity to remind people that mandates are not suggestions. You know, suggestions are just that, suggestions, and there's room to receive somebody's suggestion and then say you're going to filter their suggestion through your knowledge of what is appropriate early childhood education, and then potentially say, I appreciate your suggestion, but that's not going to work here, and here are two or three basic reasons why.
Yeah. I guess the only way to wrap this one up is to say, hey, if you're out there in the front lines dealing with this bullshit, thank you, and thank I'm sorry. I mean, that's, I hope you make it through it. Because
we do.
I wouldn't make it through it. So you're a stronger person than I, if you're weathering the storm, I guess. This has been the Child Care Barn Grill podcast. Back soon with another episode, hopefully more uplifting than this. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.